Ronnie and George adjourned to George's suite at his father's house, where they could be reasonably sure they were free of intrusive recorders.
How are we going to keep the samples from being stolen?
Why would they be, if no one knows we're carrying them?
But if someone suspects...
Look, you heard what they said. I've got the perfect excuse for going to the Guerny Republic. My aunt was rejuvenated there, and her doctors asked for clarification of the records.
They won't let you look at her records.
How do you know? They have different laws. Maybe their laws don't say anything about medical confidentiality. Besides, I can ask. They don't have to answer.
Well, I suppose that makes sense.
George reached out and took a handful of tawny grapes.
These are good. I wish we were traveling with your Aunt Cecilia. I've never forgotten the food her gardeners and cooks put on the table.
Which brings up how we will travel. It will be too obvious if we take a private yacht.
We're going commercial?
Yes, and not even a major line. Your father suggested a mixed cargo vessel.
Blast him. He's afraid we'll get into trouble on a big passenger liner. He should know better by now.
Well, unless you want to pop for a ticket yourself, we haven't much choice.
Ronnie's parents, faced with a lawsuit from his aunt, were busily divesting themselves of assets, trying to lessen the blow. That meant his usual generous credit line had been pared down, if not to the bone, at least well beneath its usual cushion.
No. My father says this is no time for us to show off our wealth, and I'm not in the royals anymore, so I don't need that size allowance. I think he's trying to get me to go do something with my life, you know?
I know.
It's time you made something of yourself, young man. And when I was your age, I had already... that speech.
He doesn't say it like that, but he's hinting. At least he's not pushing me to take classes at the university.
Brun had fun on a mixed cargo ship. We should be able to survive.
Survival won out over fun when they discovered that there were no, absolute zero, eligible girls on the Secorville. No eligible anythings, in fact. The other passengers were bored, middle-aged, middle managers on business trips. Once they discovered that Ronnie and George were chairholders' sons and not active in any corporation, they went back to their hand comps and ignored them. Finally, they arrived in the Guerny Republic and transferred to a local line for the run to Music. At last, there were other passengers, not only Guernesi, and not all over 40. Ronnie had no trouble acting the rich young man, and although he missed Rafa, he had to admit that evenings spent dancing in the passenger lounge were more restorative than those spent lying in the bunk, wishing she were there. On Music, they deliver their samples and the data cubes to the pharmaceutical industry's combined quality control laboratory. The director met them in his office.
We'll have the preliminary results in a day or so, but you'll want more precise tests if anything shows up. If these were not manufactured here, for instance, I presume you would like some idea where else they might have been made.
Ronnie hadn't known that was possible.
Well, yes.
You're not a chemist or pharmacist.
No.
Ronnie hated to admit he was nothing but an ignorant errand boy, but that was the truth.
I understood that you had the confidence of your new prime minister, or whatever you call him.
Yes. That is, he's a good friend of our family.
Well, we'll be in touch. If you'll just give me your local address.
Clearly a dismissal. Ronnie looked at George and shrugged. Whatever the man thought, they were the familius in this matter, and when he viewed the cube, he would probably feel differently about it. In the meantime, they had a world to explore. Naturally, they spent that evening discovering the many ways in which young people of the city amused themselves. George watched two stunning women stroll out of the bar they were just entering.
Let's not stay too long anywhere.
No.
Ronnie, with Rafa at the back of his mind, was more interested in Music. He had chosen this bar not quite at random, from the music drifting out when the door opened.
Come on, George. We still haven't eaten yet.
George settled at the table Ronnie chose and punched up the table's menu.
That's not what I meant.
Ronnie leaned back and looked at the musicians clumped on a tiny stage. He saw two instruments new to him, one with strings and one that he guessed was a woodwind. His gaze drifted toward the bar itself, and he grabbed George's arm.
George, look over there. Who does that remind you of?
Good Lord, it is. Gerald. But he's dead. Your aunt said he died on her yacht.
Well, that's not dead. If it's not Gerald, it must be a clone. Do you suppose the Guernesi did it?
Through Ronnie's mind ran all the grisly possibilities he'd ever heard of, mostly from wild adventure yarns. Clones developed from the cells of dead men, raised to seek vengeance on murderers and the like. George, clearly, was thinking of the same stories.
It hasn't been that long. I thought they took years to grow.
We'd better find out. Suppose Aunt Cecilia was wrong. Someone ought to know.
Memory tugged at him with that phrase. Who'd said that, with disastrous results? He watched the prince, or his clone, take a long swallow of something in a tankard. It had to be the prince. That way of holding his head, the way his shoulders moved when he drank. It couldn't be anyone else.
Wait for me. I've got to check this out.
Without hearing whatever George had to say, he moved closer, his awareness narrowing to the young man at the bar as if he were a hunter stalking prey. The young man looked around, the very picture of slightly bored courtesy.
Excuse me. I believe we met. You're Gerald.
You're mistaken. My name is Gerald Andre Smith, but we've never met.
His eyes had betrayed him, with a moment of fear now shuttered in caution.
Ah.
Ronnie had no idea what to say next. This close, the young man looked exactly like the prince, but a prince not as stupefied as he had been in the last few years. Even the little scar on the temple from the time he'd fallen against a goalpost playing soccer.
I'm sorry to bother you, but you remind me very much of someone I grew up with. Extraordinary resemblance.
I'm sorry, but I think we need not continue this conversation under the circumstances.
But...
Ronnie felt a little nudge under his pocket and glanced down. Something glinted there, something his mind recognized, refused, and recognized again.
I'm sorry, but I'm not going back.
But I didn't mean...
The young man's eyes, Gerald's eyes, met his.
Whatever you meant, it's trouble for me, and I don't want trouble. I want to live here and be left alone. My treatments are almost finished.
Ronnie, what's wrong?
George was finally aware that Ronnie was in trouble. But he was in danger, too. Ronnie couldn't think what to do or say. Then he glanced beyond George and saw another prince, or clone, or whatever they were.
We need to go outside, don't we?
Anti-terrorism lectures had instructed Ronnie that going with an abductor made things worse. Resist in place, he'd been told. But the lectures hadn't told him about the sudden hollow feeling under his breastbone, or the way his knees would tremble when he thought about the weapon pressed to his side. And he was sure this was Gerald, whom he had known all his life. Gerald might want to have their postponed duel at last, but he was honorable.
Are you planning to kill us outside?
I very much hope not, but it's imperative that we talk without witnesses, and I don't intend to argue with you.
Much more decision than Gerald had shown in years, but Ronnie felt vaguely comforted.
All right. Don't hurt George. He went through enough last time.
I know. But we can't talk about it here. Come on.
But who are you?
The two identical young men gave each other quick, amused glances.
Gerald Smith.